Hey, you guys, happy Sunday. Here we are back once again.
Yep.
After, how's you guys' weekend been?
Yeah, you singing it? You singing it now?
Sure, why not?
Okay, how you guys' weekend been? Yeah, that actually ought to be, we ought to have like jingle at the beginning where you can sing it every time. Okay, and then tonight we're going to watch a haunting episode. We're going to choose one of them because haunting show tomorrow.
That's right.
It's going to be good. We're going to do this review of what my boy Xanadu sent me. He sent this from the deep heart of the desert. This is No Country for Old Men, which is a neo-western taking place in American Southwest. It's awesome.
This is an amazing movie. Now, this was actually like the first time that you had seen it, right? I had seen it.
Yeah.
I saw it in the theater. It came out in 2007, and I saw it two or three times subsequently because, you know, I love the Coen brothers. And I love all of their stuff, so I would always go see their stuff. We were talking about, Xanadu actually sent me a message and said that we were talking about Fargo, which was the movie that came out, I think, before this one, like the other Coen Brothers movie, and I fucking love Fargo, and I've been, like, wanting to rewatch it, but I think you probably like this one better than Fargo.
Yeah,
although Fargo's great, too.
I thought I saw this one, but no, I didn't. I didn't. I think I saw bits and pieces of it. I saw a couple of scenes, but I never saw the movie.
Yeah,
I was like, I never seen this.
Yeah, and this movie, I remember, like, there was a huge buzz about this when it came out because it won a fuck ton of Academy Awards, and it won Best Picture. Javier Bardem won the Best Supporting Actor, and it got, like, a couple other awards too. Like, it got pretty much all the awards and turned up in, like, pretty much every critic's, like, top 10 list for that year. And it's pretty easy to see why. This is actually, if you didn't know, it's based on a novel by Cormac McCarthy. And this is actually, from what I could determine, I haven't read that Cormac. I've read a couple of his other books, like I read The Road and stuff, but which is one of the most depressing books ever. But from everything that I could determine, this movie adaptation is very, very close to the book. There's a couple things that are different, but not much. And some of the things that they changed, that the Coen brothers changed, I think they probably changed them for, like, a decent reason. You know what I mean? Just in the service of, like, making it work better as a movie, maybe?
It's a Western, but it's not in...
Kind of.
But it's in the 1980s. It's in 1980.
Yeah.
If I was taken. I'd call it a neo-Western. It has a lot of Western tropes. It's a Western type situation. Basically outlaws, people surviving out in the desert tactics, but they got, you know, modern guns and cars and trucks, and there's no internet, of course. It's 1980, no cell phones. They actually have a damn tracker trying to track some money that the guy stole from a drug cartel. He didn't really steal it. It was just there. He just took it, you know.
Yeah, can you really steal it if everybody was dead?
Well,
I mean, it does belong to somebody.
Yeah. And it's pretty good. And it's got lawmen in it, Texas lawmen, and fucking psychopathic tracker / hitman that the cartels use to try to get that money back from a dude who's basically a cowboy, but he's got a truck, you know. It's good. Good movie.
Yeah.
And I'm watching this guy, and I'm going, man, this dude looks familiar. And I'm trying to place him. And it's the son of the guy from Andy Vahor.
Well, yeah. It's Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin.
Like I said, he's been in a fuck ton of
Brolin,
movies.
Yeah. What's his dad's name?
James Brolin.
James Brolin. That's right. It looks just like James
Brolin. But I didn't. I knew that Josh Brolin had been in, like, a shit ton of other movies, but I knew that probably you hadn't seen most of those,
I
said, probably you will know him because his dad was James Brolin, who was in Amityville Horror, because I know you've seen that.
Yeah.
So that's how
it's great, though. It's got great writing. There's a certain amount of realism in it at times, but then there's some other times there's a little bit of, I wouldn't say fantasy, but yeah, there's some fucking Hollywood moments in it, but it kind of adds to it. Almost kind of like a, not as bad as Tarantino, but kind of Tarantino-esque at certain places. But and it's got kind of an ambiguous ending, so the ending's kind of realistic, kind of how it would probably really go in real life, you know.
I think that's kind of one of the things that a lot of people, like, I don't know if they necessarily complained about it, but I think a lot of people that were kind of like were maybe confused by when they saw the movie, particularly, and this is obviously going to have spoilers, you know, because we can't really talk about it otherwise, but particularly the scene where Josh Brolin's character, Llewellyn Moss, is killed, and he's killed off screen.
Yeah.
And he's not killed by Anton Chigurh. Yeah. He's killed by the other random the random Mexicans.
The cartels.
Yeah, the cartel. And you don't see it happen.
Right.
But the thing about, I think the first time I saw this, because like I said, I did see this in the theater. And I think at first I was just kind of like, oh, that's how they want to do that. But then like the more I thought about it, the more I liked that they did that. I think, well, Joel and Ethan Coen, they've made like so many fucking great movies, man. It's just kind of like I said, Fargo, they made Raising Arizona, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. And they really like, and Blood Simple, which actually we should probably do like one of these days, because I think that's on HBO Max, and that's another really good one that I haven't seen in a long time. But I kind of feel like they really like to play with genre. And even though you said that this is a neo-Western, which it is, but they're kind of like playing with the tropes of the Western genre, like subverting the genre a little bit. Now, not all of that comes from them, because a lot of that's from the novel. But, you know, it's kind of like playing a little bit, particularly with the character that Tommy Lee Jones plays, Ed Tom.
He's almost the narrator.
In the book, he is
the narrator.
He's
okay.
A much larger character in the book.
Yeah.
But his kind of whole thing about, crime today, it's different than it was, like, back then. Like, some of the stuff that he talks about, like, some of the crimes that he's like, oh, you know, we never saw anything like that. So it's almost kind of like he's hearkening back to, like, the old days of the Westerns when it was, like, white hat, black hat.
Yeah.
And now everything's, like, morally ambiguous.
Yeah, and it's a huge wave of it coming, and it's society-wide, and it's unstoppable.
But the thing about it, though, is that him, like, having that attitude, the movie doesn't, he's not necessarily right, because he has a discussion later on with his cousin. I think that's his cousin, like the old guy in the wheelchair, like where he goes out there. And the guy like points out to him, he's like, you know, our grandfather, great grandfather, whatever, he got shot in the back like by a bunch of Comanches or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was just like as random and stupid as like shit that's going on nowadays. He's like, so what you're feeling now, it's like nothing has changed. But when you get older, you always kind of like idealize the past a little bit. And I don't think that's like the main point of the film, but I thought that was kind of like a little thing that was going on.
Yeah, but that's the author's opinion. It is different. But the main thing is just the scale of what's happening now. The Old West was not very violent because it was sparsely populated. When violence happened, people remembered it. Like the OK Corral. If that happens all the time in Chicago, it's totally forgotten. Every day, every weekend, an OK Corral goes down in Chicago. You don't even hear about it. But that went down as legend in the Old West.
Well, like you said, because the population was so sparse.
It's a small, real small population.
You know.
And it wasn't as violent as people think it was. Yeah, violence happened. And they remembered it. That's why you're getting these stories. So there is some truth into what he was saying. He was saying it's endemic and it's coming like a wave. Well, it's because the population's gone up. And in order to get noticed, it has to be even more violent than it was. But, you know, it's storytelling. You know, this movie is storytelling. And one of the things, the reason why some of the main characters, because the wife, too, you assume she dies off screen.
She does. She dies in the book, for sure. Like, it says, and then he shot her, like, in the book.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. That's how it would go down in real life. Because you're used to Western movies where the main characters are kind of important. But in reality, these people would have been irrelevant. I mean, they came out of trailer parks. There's really nothing special to them. They were...
Well, that's
like
what I'm saying.
Else.
That's why I liked.
Yeah.
And I can see why some people that were used to seeing like Hollywood Westerns or Hollywood movies that are structured a particular way would be mad that there wasn't like a big showdown. Like, you know, Xanada just said there's no final showdown.
Yeah.
Like even, and honestly, in the movie, not so much in the book, but in the movie, the three main characters don't ever meet each other.
Yeah,
they're like not even at the same place at the same time. They're just kind of like constantly following each other, really. You know, obviously, like, Anton, like, chases Llewellyn and shoots at him and stuff like that, but they don't, like, talk to one another, really, except on the phone. So they're always kind of, like, at one remove from each other, or always, like, missing each other and stuff like that. And like you said, I really liked how they kind of, even though I think when I first saw the movie, it kind of pissed me off, like, how Llewellyn got killed off screen, even though that does kind of happen in the book, too. But it's explained a little bit more, but not really. But like you said, I think that's what I liked about it, is because these people are not, like, important. And, like, the whole kind of theme of the movie is just about circumstances and fate and, like, kind of the difference between how much your self-determination, you know, affects, like, how things turn out and how much of it is just, like, luck. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Well, so I kind of liked that aspect of it.
Well, that's brought up by the damn Texas Ranger guy, Woody Harrelson character. He says, he's talking to the guy's wife, and he's like, look, he's in this way over his head. He goes, oh, no, he was in the Army, you know, he can handle it. And fucking the guy's like, nah. And then, and even the psychopathic hitman was like, we know how this is going to go. Okay, we know how this is going to end. And it was going to end the way it always ends, you know, me killing you. And the only guy from that particular trio of characters to survive was the hitman.
Well, the cop survived, but he retired.
Yeah, he retired.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I'm talking about that trio.
Yeah.
The dude, his wife, and the hitman survived.
He did.
And he called it. He said, this is how it's going to go down. I'm going to kill your wife, and you're going to die.
That's the thing. He offered... He said, well, I'm going to kill you regardless.
Yeah.
Which actually didn't end up happening because the Mexicans killed him. But I'm just saying, he's like, well, I'm going to kill you regardless. But if you give me the money, I'll let your wife go.
Yeah.
But because he said, no, that's not how it's going to happen, like, he tried to, like, drop his nuts and say there was going to be a big showdown.
Yeah.
But there never was
there
one.
There was one, yeah.
Because he got killed. So he was kind of, like, honor-bound or obligated, as much as a psychopath can have, you know, a code of honor.
Well,
he's like, well, I said that I was going to kill you, so I'm here to do it. Like, you know, no, nothing personal.
Yeah, and he told her the truth. He said he could have let you go. He could have saved you, but he chose not to.
Yeah.
And which
he just chose to come after me because he thought that...
Yeah.
He thought that he... had more control over his life than he actually had.
Right. Hitman called it, you know, and was telling the truth. Fucking the Brody guy should have made that deal. Because he could have still gone after him and killed him.
Yeah.
But he should have made it. But he wasn't as smart as he thought he was. He wasn't as good as he thought he was.
Yeah.
All right. And he was... Yeah, so what? He was from some infantry unit. He'd been living out in the country after that, not really doing a whole hell of a lot. He was outnumbered by a bunch of pro killers, professional killers, you know. His chances are fucking slim because quantity has a quality all its own. Fucking just going after three guys who are fucking trained fighters is fucking tough. Two. Nah. In the military, they'll tell you, do not attack an enemy until you have fucking 3-to-1 superiority. In other words, you better have two guys with you. If you're going to go after a dude, that's a winning ratio. You don't want 3-1 the hard way. Your chances of survival are fucking very, very slim.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I think that his character, even though he was pretty much a good guy, I mean, yeah, it was probably dumb for him to take that money, but I feel like most people would probably do the same thing.
He was dumb for going back.
Yeah, like, he should have just taken it
and just run and not gone
although
back.
He didn't, he won, look for a transponder, like, so, like somebody said earlier, like, if you find that much money in the
desert.
Yeah,
I would have fucking gotten rid of the bag that it was in, gone through all that shit, but he didn't do that.
I mean, you don't find shit like that every day. So.
Nothing he didn't do is that he had that guy, the dying cartel narco guy in there asking for water, and he said, well, I don't have any water. And didn't even make any fucking...
I don't got no agua.
He didn't make any fucking moves to resolve that situation. He should have either shot that dude then or fucking taken him with him. That would have been a totally different
situation.
But see,
the fact that he didn't do that, like I said, that's meant to show that he's, like, at heart, even though, he just stole a bunch of money, which is probably
dumb.
He wasn't
a very good
dude. He was a good guy. He couldn't just kill the guy in cold blood.
But he didn't take him.
And then later on,
he could have taken him.
But like I said...
I would have taken him.
Yeah.
Okay. I would have taken him and the money and maybe worked something out with them. They probably would have paid you for rescuing one of them guys and saving the money. That was another thing that he could have done.
Yeah, but he
I got your man. I got him fixed up. I got your money. Break me off some. They probably would give you some.
Maybe, or they would just kill you anyway.
They'd probably give you some. If you were in a neutral area and you called them in.
But like I said, that was kind of the whole point of his character, was that he was like a good guy, like a relatable guy, but he did dumb shit that most people would probably do, like if put in the same situation. But then he made the mistake of thinking that, as I said, he had more control over the situation than he did, because he was a little bit at a disadvantage, not only because he was outnumbered, but because, you know, again, just like his wife said, or like the cop said, that he was in over his head. And Anton Chigurh, the guy like following him, was a complete and utter psychopath who absolutely did not care about killing people at all, and it was just like all the same to him, and that's all that he wanted, like, was to get the money back. And so he didn't really have any limitations imposed by morality, I guess. So in that way, he had an advantage over. But I was going to say, one of my favorite scenes, and like I said, I think some people maybe, at the end of the movie, like when he's talking to, when Anton is talking to Carla Jean, you know, the guy's wife, and they don't actually show him kill her. And some people are like, well, wait, did he kill her or not? He totally did kill her. I mean, like I said, in the book, it makes it very clear that he killed her. But in the movie, he comes out the house and then looks at the bottom of his boots. And if you remember, there was a bunch of scenes earlier where he very specifically didn't want to get blood, like, on his shoes or, like, on his socks. So they had brought that up before. So, again, that's kind of like, you should have extrapolated from that. And also, because he had promised that he would kill her, if he didn't get the, if Llewellyn didn't give him the money back, and Llewellyn didn't give him the money back. Yeah. So he just promised to kill her. Now, the thing that's interesting, though, is that this last scene, which is slightly different than it was in the book, but when he talks to Carla Jean, and she makes the very reasonable, like, he, you know, he does the whole coin flip thing and says, call it, and she refuses to. Because she basically says, you know, that coin doesn't have anything to say about it. It's just you making that decision. So she was almost, like, telling him that he was trying to, like, absolve himself of responsibility for killing people, like, by putting it in the hands of fate, essentially. So the fact that after she tells him that, and then he kills her anyway, and then he gets in that car accident, is, like, really, really interesting. It's almost kind of like, because he made so many statements going throughout the film about, you know, this road led you to this spot and things like that, but then when he sort of, like, refused to take responsibility for his own actions, in the sense that he's leaving things in the hand of the coin,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Then he kind of, he realizes that he is also subject to the whims of fate when he just gets randomly hit by this car that ran a red light. You know what I mean?
Okay, Xander just asked me what I thought of the guns. What am I making? Okay. Overall, the guns that were shown were accurate to 1980. All right. The character, what's the name, main character's name? The Brolin's character, I don't remember what it is. Llewellyn. Yeah, Llewellyn knows his guns when he shows up at the damn kill zone where all the damn dead narcos were. He takes the best guns that he saw. There were some, I think there were some AK-47s there on the ground. I saw a couple of MAC-10s. And he goes right for the best one that was there, which was an MP5K. Those hadn't been out for very long. They came out in about 76, I think. 77, so that was very exotic, very expensive for that place and time. The MP5K is it's a PDW, a personal defense weapon. You didn't see that in movies. First time I saw that in the movies was Lethal Weapon 1, the South African bodyguards to the ambassador had one, and fucking Mel Gibson goes, what is that underneath there? Is that something South African? It was German, but so he takes that and mysteriously loses it. You know, he had it for a while, and then he doesn't have it anymore, which I was like, what?
Did he lose it in that car, like, after he hijacked that car, and then, like, he got shot at, and then, like, he left a bunch of shit in the car?
Yeah, he had it for a while, and then you don't see it anymore. I don't know what happened to it, but that would have been a priority to keep something like that in 1980. So I don't know why he abandoned that. And then he... off that one dead narco that he found. He took a it was a chrome, pimped out chrome 1911 45 auto. I think it might have been engraved too, which those were as accurate to Mexico. Mexicans loved 1911s. They still love them to this day. They're still down there. But before gun control hit Mexico, back in the days when they could buy guns, that was one of their most popular one, and they would cowboy those things fucking up. When you think of cowboy, you're thinking of fucking white dudes? No, man, the Mexicans got the cowboy thing down, man. They'd take those 1911s and they'd put scroll work on them and Mexican eagles and Mayan and Aztec fucking calendars and just whatever, you know what I mean? They would pimp them things out like crazy. So he took that. That was a nice piece. The assassin was using what was that thing? Winchester 1100 or no, Remington 1100, I think is either Remington, look like 1100 semi-automatic shotguns, what it looked like. I can go back and check. And it had been suppressed, which I don't know how feasible that is. That might have been a movie gun. They made it for the
movie specifically.
I've never heard of anything like that.
I saw a video earlier where they said that had been made specifically.
Yeah, usually with things like semi-auto shotguns from the older ones from that era, you couldn't suppress something like that. It would probably fuck up the gas operations. Some of the stuff was kind of semi-recoil operated, where the barrel itself would kind of move in about a quarter of an inch to help unlock the action. It all depended on what kind of shotgun that was, because I don't know the exact model. Do you remember what they said, what model it was?
No.
Now, if it was pump action, I might buy into that a little bit more, okay? But, man, I don't know how well of a gas seal you'd be able to get on a damn shot shell with a buffer, plastic fucking buffer behind it going through those baffles like that. Probably couldn't get a very good seal, but it would probably moderate it. It would probably act more like a moderator than a suppressor, which moderators don't legally meet the definition of a suppressor. They don't reduce enough decibels. They just kind of make something sound a little bit more mild, but it's still loud, you know. But the idea of a shotgun as quiet as what they were showing, no, I ain't buying that at all. Fuck no. A fully suppressed 9mm pistol is still louder than a .22 unsuppressed. You're not hiding the fact that shots are fired. You're just not quite sure what it was that you're being shot at with, and you don't have to wear hearing protection. And using them indoors is a lot easier. It's not ringing your bell. But if you get real battle-hardened like me, I'd shoot my fucking belt-fed M60 indoors. You know, inside fucking confined areas like fucking sandbag bunker complexes on live fire exercises and shit, but I'm also deaf. You know? Just ask Jenny. I'm also pretty deaf.
I'm pretty deaf, and I think you might be deafer than I am.
Yeah,
which is saying something because I'm pretty fucking deaf.
there were times where fucking me and fucking Sparks laid down fucking fields of grazing fire, fucking probably fucking 2,000 rounds of belted ammunition, and not a fucking inside a fucking sandbag bunker, just during fucking live fire exercises, and no hearing and protection. I don't even remember ringing in my ears afterwards. It just became normal. But, you know, that's because we shot our ears out back in those days. We were young and dumb.
Danny Rowling is requesting us to do Legend Trippers, A Haunting.
We'll do it, but I want to move that one down a little bit further in the ranks. Legend Trippers was kind of one of the oddball ones. We still have some of the fucking high-profile ones that I want to do first.
Well, somebody asked us to do Darkness Follows or Echoes of the Past.
Yeah, I'd rather do something like
that. Because I think those were, like, actually requested before.
Yeah,
Danny Rowling also was talking about the Cattle air gun. Yeah, I was really, like, freaked out by that the first time I saw the movie because it's just so... But when you think about it, it's really, like, the perfect weapon for him to have because, like I said, he's just, like, a stone-cold psychopath and he just considers people like cattle, like, not like people. So he's just, like, fucking...
Yeah, it's more of a psychological thing. You got to carry around his big old air bottle. There's something else that's a lot better than that, that's a lot more... A lot quieter and a lot more deadly and a lot smaller, and that's a shark bang stick. You can get them in 38 Special. And they're quiet. But you got to make content. You cut it down small, put a damn bicycle grip on it, put a 38 Special cartridge in it, and fucking hit somebody like that, you won't hear anything. It'll just go pop.
I don't really think that Anton Chigurh was worried about anybody hearing anything.
Yeah.
He really didn't seem to give much of a crap about getting caught or... And he, well, he did get caught at the beginning of the movie, and then he just very, very methodically stepped out of the like stepped over and just like very coldly like strangled that cop to death, that deputy to death. So he wasn't obviously very worried about. In the book, I think they made it kind of more clear that he sort of allowed himself to get caught just to see if he could get out of it.
Yeah.
They didn't really say that in the movie, but it didn't really matter because, like I said, he really seemed like. I mean, he really, like somebody said earlier, like, yeah, he really did earn that Oscar. I mean, he was, like, the most inhuman character. And I've seen him in tons of other stuff, and he's a great fucking actor. But, I mean, he was just, like, fucking scary in that.
Yeah.
He really did not seem like anybody that had any emotions at all or was even... They said that when they were looking for somebody to be in the, you know, to do that role, they said we wanted somebody that was like almost like they were from Mars, you know what I mean? Like they were just this kind of weird. And I think he totally, totally pulled that off. And did I say, mention earlier that I saw, I was watching a video earlier that said, I guess a few years ago, like they'd had like all these psychiatrists and psychologists like all get together and like watch all of these movies that had like, you know, crazy people or like serial killers. And they said, which movie adaptation, like which movie character is the closest to like what an actual psychopath is? And it was this guy. Like, that's who they voted for. Because they said he just seems like he has no humanity at all. And I think he really, really pulled that off. But like I said, he did... I think the reason that his character was so interesting, too, is that he did have a code of honor. He didn't kill everybody that he could have killed. He just kind of killed people that got in his way. Or sometimes, if he was just for shits and giggles, he would, you know, do the coin flip thing just to... fuck with him, but you know he didn't kill the guy at the gas station. Like he let him do
the
thing.
He
won the coin toss, so it's like it wouldn't have been fair if he'd have killed him then. But he killed other people just like because, like I said, because he needed their car or just for no reason at all. But he didn't. He when he went to that the place where he you know was shot the guy that was I guess his boss or like worked for the company or whatever, like he shot that guy but he didn't shoot the other guy that was in the office, like the accountant guy, like he didn't shoot that guy because that guy I guess didn't have anything to do with like whatever pissed him off. So but you know there's that. So I don't know
do you see me? He's like, no, I don't see you.
Yeah, we'll see. That's if you were smart, that's what you say. I absolutely do not see you at all. No, sir.
Yeah.
don't put that fucking cattle gun in my fucking head.
Yeah.
But one thing, too, like, I don't know why. I've seen this movie, like, a bunch of times, but I always forget how funny it is. And it's not, like, funny, like, Raising Arizona is funny, but it's that very, very, and I guess, like, a lot of Coen Brothers movies have this. Like, Fargo is like this, too, where it just has this very, very dry, like, black humor. And particularly in Tommy Lee Jones's character, like, some of the shit he says in this just, like, made me laugh my fucking ass off.
This deputy's dumb as shit.
I know. And it's like, I really, really like that. That guy that played the deputy, that played his deputy, he actually wanted to be, he wanted the Josh Brolin role.
Okay.
They said he tried out for it, like, a whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
But they didn't give it to him. So they were like, what's his name? Garrett Dillahunt. That's the actor's name. But, I mean... Tommy Lee Jones is just so great in this. Like, just the funny discussions they have about when him and the deputy are talking about, like, all the Mexicans that got killed out in the desert. And he's like, you know, they were Mexicans. Or, wait, are they still Mexicans? Like, now that they're dead? And he's just like, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, when did they stop being Mexicans?
Yeah.
Like, after they're like, just the funny shit like that. And just the way he says it, he's just, like, so... like sardonic, and it's just I fucking love the sense of humor in this one, even though most of the stuff that happens is like really grim. This is actually a pretty grim movie, but I really like those little, and I don't know if that's in the book or not, because like I said, I haven't read this book, but I've read The Road, which is absolutely not funny. I don't think there's any humor in that at all, so I don't really know if there's any humor in the book or if that was just a Coen Brothers thing, because I know that's very much a Coen Brothers thing, that sense of humor they had, because you know they made The Big Lebowski too, right?
Yeah.
Same guys. But You know, I'm just, yeah, I had a feeling that you were really going to like this movie, so I'm glad you did. Now, you said last night, you said you weren't sure if you liked the ending or not.
I thought about it for a while, and I was like, yeah, okay, because I did kind of miss the having a big showdown at the end of it.
Yeah.
But I understand why they didn't do it.
Thinking about it, I'm kind of glad they did it, because like I said, that wasn't really
the point. It just would have been another one.
Yeah, that wasn't really the point of the story.
There's a lot of those, and it would have been another movie with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it tried to make an impression on you in a different way about how, by the way, this was a movie, but it wasn't really a movie. This is how it would have really went down. These people really weren't that important.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, you know, the only reason that Llewellyn got involved at all...
Totally luck.
It was just totally luck. He just happened to be out hunting, and he happened to see, you know, what happened, and he's like, oh, there's the money. Yeah. So he just got, like, sucked into this, like, much larger world. And so I kind of think, too, that the movie is showing that, you know, reality, all of this stuff, like, goes on without you. You're just kind of like this piddly little...
Yeah, and the idea of one man going up against the Mexican mob and winning, nah, ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, so
They kill dudes all the time that think that. All the time. All those dudes that end up in them damn videos where they're cutting them apart with a knife, they thought they could fucking beat the Mexican mob. No, you can't. They outnumber you, and they have fucking a shit ton of money and a lot of experience and a lot of cops and ex-soldiers in their ranks that teach them and train them up just like a professional army, especially you know, a good narco army is like that. One man has no chance against them.
Yeah, and I like this, like I said, this movie is very...
Yeah.
Yeah, it has, like, themes about certain things, so it's kind of thematically constructed in that way, but it is absolutely a lot more realistic. This is probably absolutely what would happen, you know, if you were in this scenario. Like I said, the guy wasn't... Yeah, he'd been in Vietnam, and yeah, he was a welder, so he... And he'd been, like, lived out in the desert, so he was kind of tough and everything, but, like I said, he was outnumbered. He wasn't a psychopath, and... He didn't really have, I guess, the luxury of being on the wrong side of the law.
Yeah.
You know, he seemed like he was mostly a good law-abiding citizen.
Yeah.
So he didn't really know.
Yeah. Those narcos had fucking guys working inside damn Mexican law enforcement that have access to their computer files. They can do fucking all kinds of background checks on you using law enforcement fucking computers. And then he can hand all that shit over to the fucking, to the mob. All right? That's how they do that shit. Okay? They got cops in their ranks and people that work in the fucking, their police departments. They do a background check on you and fucking find out everything about you and all your relatives. And they hand all that information over to the mob and you're fucking dead. They'll get you.
Well, and the thing about this too, it's like even though Llewellyn was smart, you know, and he did think of some things like, oh shit, he's gonna he'll be able to like pull the records from my car and figure out where I live and stuff, so he knew like to get the fuck out of the house, but there were some things that he forgot about, like he knew to get the fuck out of the house, but he left a phone bill there.
So all
that Anton had to do was like look at the phone bill and just like call people.
He had a clean break. He got into the fucking kill zone where the shootout went down, got the money, all right, and got to his car and went back home cleanly. They didn't know who that was. He had that tracker in there, but he could have found that tracker. He had time. The range on that thing wasn't unlimited.
Yeah.
He could have thrown that tracker away and gotten rid of that thing and spread that money out and then moved away like a man. Okay. The thing is, though, is that you'd have to move away and hide your wife to make sure that they didn't know who you were. That would take a long time. You'd have to wait for a couple of years before you were sure that they didn't know who you were. Then you could go back and collect your wife and start buying stuff.
That's what I'm saying. I'm just kind of like, this is a pro tip. Anytime, like in a movie or anything, so anytime in real life, you find like the big fucking stash and I'm like, did you guys not see A Simple Plan? How that worked out? Because that was the same thing where they found like a crash plane and it was a drug deal. And it wasn't a drug deal. It was ransom money. And it was like three guys found it and like it everything just completely went to shit. As smart as you might think you are, there's going to be something that you don't think of. And I kind of feel like, probably 99% of the people would be tempted to take it. But I kind of feel like in the end, it's probably not worth it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
they're saying that the hitman was pissed off at the fucking haircut his barber gave him. No, in 1980, you saw those haircuts. They were from the 70s. But
well,
they guys with him.
They said that the reason they said they wanted him, like I said, they wanted him to look. It looked like kind of alien or like out of time and place, like with the clothes that he wore and stuff like that. They said they actually got the idea for that haircut from a photo of a guy from 1979 that was standing in front of like a strip club or something like that. Like it was an old like 1979 photo, like New York City or something.
That was the 70s cool guy haircut from like 73 that was out of style by that time. All right. But he should have had a big fucking collars, leisure suit, and fucking... And he was too old to have that haircut at that point. That's the same haircut the Bee Gees had at certain times. Okay?
I mean, I remember seeing people with those haircuts, but I think that that haircut... I mean, that haircut's probably looks bad on everybody, but it probably doesn't look that weird on other people, but they wanted it to look really, really weird on him.
Well, it did.
Which it did, because they wanted him to look, like, really fucking strange. And honestly, that one scene where he stops at one car, like, before he kills the guy with the cattle gun, and, like, that creepy, creepy smile that he makes, like, out in the sun, it's like, he looks, like, so fucking weird in this. He gained a lot of weight for this role, actually.
That haircut was supposed to be on a fucking younger dude in a leisure suit in some old school nightclub that they used to have.
Yeah.
When a nightclub was a bunch of tables in front of a fucking stage. That's what those motherfuckers wore. A lot of them. They thought they were real cool. You know. 7 or 8 years later, it looked fucking crazy as shit, though. Because they had aged.
Yeah.
Fucking shit had changed. And they tried to have them haircuts. Sometimes you saw photographs of it in catalogs or just, you know, you'd still see some old motherfucker with that, and he'd be balding, and he still had that haircut, trying to maintain that shit. It was just, you know, it was fucking funny.
Yeah, Danny Rowling said, a life where you have to watch your back 24/7 is not a good life to live. Yeah, you wouldn't really be able to enjoy it. I mean, if I found $2 million, sure, fuck yeah, I'd be tempted to take it, but then I'd be thinking to myself, well, I can't spend it. I'd have to, like,
could.
Maybe back then,
you
but
could.
Not nowadays.
I don't think those bills would have been marked or anything. You'd have to be in a totally cash economy. You wouldn't want to buy anything real big. You'd have to launder it.
Yeah, you'd have to
you
really keep
sure
on the down low.
Before you were sure they weren't watching.
And even
those
then,
numbers.
You could never be.
It was a bunch of
absolutely
hundreds.
Sure.
It was a bunch of hundreds. So you'd have to go around over a period of time spending hundreds and getting change. And then once you had the change, you could spend that no problem. But you'd have to fucking spread them hundreds out.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think that most people would be tempted to be like, woo, I'm going to go buy a fucking,
you
know.
You couldn't buy a house with that.
That's what I mean.
Because that cash would show up inside of a banking system somewhere, and if they had agents in there, if the cartels had agents in there looking for those numbers, they would say, well, wait a minute. Oh, all these numbers came out of the purchase of that house? Then they know who bought that house.
Yeah.
You couldn't buy that house with those exact bills. You'd have to fucking change those bills for other bills.
Yeah.
So, and they were all hundreds. So you'd have to run around in restaurants in a place where you don't live, getting fucking meals every day, 3 meals a day, to get $300 a day, cash a day, you know. You'd be gaining a lot of weight buying $20 meals.
Well, you don't necessarily have to buy food at restaurants. You could buy...
It'd be the easiest way, because
restaurants can
change 100.
You could buy other things. Like, you could just go to, like, the drugstore and buy, like, some fucking...
Yeah.
I don't know, some aspirin or some shit.
Yeah, you'd be throwing the shit away every time you buy it. And then you're collecting all this fucking shit in a big old fucking bag. And then you slowly get rid of all those hundreds into change. And then you go back to a bank and you take all those fucking... change and you just and get it for 500s or 1,000s and buy a house with that. You could back in those days. Nowadays you couldn't buy a house with cash, I don't think, not in the United States.
People might be like,
they'd want to know where you got that
where
cash.
You got it. Yeah,
yeah,
because nobody really has that
I
much
think,
cash other
yeah.
than, you know, drug dealers.
No, I couldn't walk in here $475,000 house in cash. No, they I think the banks are so get alerted when you buy something.
Yeah.
It's supposed to alert.
Well, like I said, rightfully so, because that's usually...
Drug money.
Drug money, because who the fuck else has $475,000 just in cash laying around?
Usually
nobody, that's who.
Usually what they'll do is they'll do something like buy a used car lot with the money. Buy a used car lot, and they run that used car lot for a few years, and then they start claiming that they're selling cars. They are selling cars, but they're saying, well, all this money came from the car lot. Or the fucking coin-operated laundry.
Yeah, money laundry.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
John Smith said, real kick in the balls is that money was probably just pocket change to the cartel. It probably was. It was what? It was
$2
million.
$2 million.
It was $2 million.
That's nothing.
But they were just, it was the principle. It was the principle of the thing.
Yeah, but that's not realistic, though. Chances are they wouldn't have time or money to spend on lost money. They would just go, fuck it. We got more money coming. And they just, okay, here's an example. The Cocaine Cowboys on that program. Which is real. It happened here in Florida. And these are the Miami guys who were bringing in cocaine. They would just buy these safe houses all over. And they were houses where they could take their girlfriends and bring in big pallets of money and drugs and stage things. And some of them had shortwave radio centers where they could talk to the airfields down in Columbia and crap, you know. And... they would kind of regularly buy and sell these houses, so they were also doing kind of like real estate deals, you know? They didn't really care about the real estate money that much. Once you make a certain amount of money, you can't help but to make more and more and more money. It becomes like fake money after a while. Well, they sold one of those houses to somebody, and a few years later, that person called the cops, and up in the attic was a pallet of a couple million dollars in cash. A pallet of it. Sitting up in the attic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was money they forgot about.
They just forgot about it. Can you imagine just like being able to forget about $2 million?
Yeah.
That we did stick that up there, didn't we?
Yeah, they asked them about it later. And go, we forgot all about that. Because they had lots of those pallets of fucking money everywhere. And they would just store it and stash it in places and hand out money to people and buy things. And over time, just forget about where they had money stashed.
Must be nice.
Yeah. It's like play money. Didn't matter. And they get pulled over by the cops down there in Miami and fucking, can I see your driver's license registration? You know what? You know all this kind of stuff. And the guy just goes, look, I got a big old stash of fucking cocaine in there, about $1 million of it, and I got $1 million in cash back there. Why don't you just take it? And the cop go back there and take it and just leave. Yeah. Okay. So don't think the fucking things actually work. No. Not really. Money talks, bullshit walks. Dude did that on a date. He had a date with him, and he didn't want to get pulled over and go to jail. He would have been right back out. They locked his ass up, gave him fucking, I think, 10 years, and fucking a few weeks later, about a year later, they realized he wasn't in prison anymore. He got out. They just let him out. They were still counting him on the damn roll count. Like he was in prison. But some mysterious way, he was just let out the back door. If you have enough money, anything can happen.
Pretty much.
Yep.
Xanada also says, I love Fargo. I do as well. And honestly, I've been wanting to rewatch that. Because I saw that in the theater, too. That came out in the year before this one, I think. Didn't it?
Yeah.
I kind of feel like. But yeah, I don't know. You would probably like that as well. That's similar to this one. I kind of feel like it's a little bit funnier. And it's set in, not in the desert, but it's Minnesota, North Dakota. So it's kind of like set in the winter, so it's like all snowy and everything, but it's like similarly themed, like it's a crime kind of thing, but like with some black comedy. But yeah, so maybe we'll do that one too, like eventually, because I've been wanting to rewatch that. So do you have anything else you would like to add?
No, we're shipping out shirts soon, aren't we?
Tomorrow morning, they're going to come and get it. Okay. It's all packed up. All right,
cab guy. Tomorrow morning, they pick up on the shirts.
Yeah, they're going to pick it up tomorrow morning. Got it all packed up and all the postage and everything like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. So, tomorrow, we're going to do our Haunting Monday.
That's right.
So, we don't know. Like I said, I know some of you guys like want us to do Legend Trippers, and somebody said to do, what was the one called? The Counselor. But probably, like I said, we had a bunch that were requested. Mm-hmm. And I remember Darkness Follows was requested. I remember Echoes from the Past was requested. Where Evil Lurks, I think that was requested as well. We didn't do that one yet, did we? Mm. So maybe we'll do one of those. I don't know. We'll see.
Another thing I want to announce is that I opened up a Twitch account on Twitch where I'm going to stream me playing the classic fucking Tomb Raider games. Sophie wants to see me play those games. I don't have a microphone yet, so I won't be talking, but I'll be able to read chats. So if you guys want to watch me play video games on Twitch, it'll probably be another couple of days before I start doing it. My name on there is Tom 13 O'Clock, all lowercase. There's no apostrophe. Just Tom 13 O'Clock on Twitch. You can friend me on there.
You have to get a microphone one of these days so people can hear
they're
you.
They're cheap. I think they're about $30, $40 a headset with a microphone on there. Yeah, I got one. I can hear through the microphone. If I can hear through the headsets, it's a USB one. I can hear through the headsets, but I can't. Somehow, it's not picking up the microphone. It's one for Skype.
It's old. We just had. I don't even remember where we got it from. I didn't even. He comes in and he's. I was like, I don't remember. Buying that, or I don't remember.
So I'm sitting there trying to turn the microphone on, and I don't think it can turn on. I don't think it's right, but I can hear it through the headphones.
Oh well, like I said, I don't think they're all.
I need to get a damn wireless one anyway.
Yeah, because that was like I said that we've had that for probably years. I didn't. We've had it for so long. I didn't even remember we had it.
Yeah, but I think I can even get super chats on Skype. Not on Skype, on Twitch.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. See, that'll be fun, yeah. You can play all the Lara Croft
play games. Play the old Lara Croft games and fucking talk shit about it. I'm going to start off with Legend, and then Anniversary, and then I'll probably do Underworld.
Yeah, those are all fun. Yeah. Maybe you could do Fallout, too, at some point.
Yeah, that's so long.
Yeah, that's true.
That's just so long.
All right, so thanks, everybody, for dropping by today, talking about the Coen brothers, talking about No Country for Old Men. And we'll be back tomorrow talking about a haunting episode, as we usually do on Mondays. So have a good rest of your weekend, you guys, and we will see you again tomorrow evening. Bye.